Well, good afternoon, everyone.
Hello. That's better.
How can you not be awake after that?
Thank you, Rick. That was awesome. It's hard to follow something like that sometimes.
I remember years ago, I used to try doing a little singing, and Mark Hoffer and I used to put things together. And one year we were at a special Sabbath, Super Sabbath, or whatever they want to call it. But Mark and I were slated to sing, and we had to sing right after this girl. Her name's Hope Pine. Many of you know her, but she's a fantastic singer. And she did this beautiful song, and then Mark and I had to get up and sing right after her. And if I remember right, the whole thing fell apart, and we butchered it, and it was just awful. So that's what happens when you follow somebody really good. But I'm going to be doing something a little more interactive today. I don't know if everybody would like to move a little closer. You're more than welcome to. I might not have the mic, so you might not be able to hear me, and I might not be able to hear you. But excuse me, hopefully we can, it'll be something that'll be enjoyable. You know, Bob had mentioned about the kids didn't have to respect him because his hair's dark, and the person he may have been talking about may have been me, I'm not sure. He kind of looked my way a little bit, but, you know, I have gray hair because of my kids. That's why. So, so anyway. But anyway, let's start today by turning to Titus chapter 2. Titus chapter 2, and we'll read a couple verses there. Titus chapter 2, and starting in verse 11, it says, "For the grace of God that brings salvation has appeared to all men. It teaches us to say no to ungodliness and worldly passions and to live self-controlled, upright, and godly lives in this present age, while we wait for the blessed hope, the glorious appearing of our great God and Savior, Jesus Christ, who gave Himself for us to redeem us from all wickedness and to purify for Himself a people that are His very own, eager to do what is good." And in that verses, those few verses there, we can see, in a sense, the gospel in miniature. And, you know, we find that throughout Scripture, where you can find two or three verses where the gospel message is given in just a couple verses, or maybe even one verse. And, you know, that's the case in this passage as well. But I'd like to focus more on verse 13, where it talks about the second coming of Christ as the blessed hope. You know, that's something that we look forward to. That's our hope. That's the one thing that we just look forward to. And especially at this time of year, we focus on the second coming of Christ. And maybe not so much other times of the year, but you know, this time of year, we really start to focus on it, especially on the Feast of Trumpets, which, you know, could be the very day that Jesus returns. You know, we don't know that for sure, but it seems like it would really fit in with everything we understand from Scriptures. Well, today I'd like to just take some time to look through some of the views of the second coming. You know, it's a big subject when you start talking about the second coming of Christ, and there's many ideas about it, how it's going to happen, many models, there's different approaches, and I know we won't get through all of it, but maybe it's just enough to whet your appetite a little bit, but at least in the next 40 minutes or so, we'll have it all in order, and we'll have the exact thing all detailed out, and won't be any questions about the second coming. And if you believe that, then I got some a bridge for you to sell. But I just hope to whet your appetite today, and we'll look at some of these things. So anyway, I'm going to start with a little illustration on this board here, and we're just going to start with a timeline, and we'll start here with the ascension of Christ. I don't know if you can read that, but I don't even know if I'm spelling it right, but looks close. And then we'll just call this the timeline from here to, you know, here's New Jerusalem coming down out of the clouds, and we'll put the return of Christ somewhere right here in the middle. Okay? And then we'll just call this the New Jerusalem. New Jerusalem. That's the New Jerusalem. I don't think the kingdom's going to be in the New Jersey. But What I'd like you to do is to give me some of the big events around the time of Christ's return, or from the time of the ascension up to New Jerusalem. The bigger events. Don't give me like the fifth trumpet or something like that. But give me the major events and tell me about, you know, we'll start putting them in there and you tell me where they go. So, anybody want to be first? Go ahead, John.
Tribulation.
Okay, the tribulation. Where should it go?
Just before the return of Christ.
Okay. You're saying the tribulation should be about right here, maybe?
3.5 to 7 years.
Okay. 3.5 to 7 years. Depending on who you talk to. Okay. There's our first debatable subject. Okay. All right, anybody else? Go ahead.
Wars.
Wars? Wars and rumors of wars. Where would that be?
Any place you
want. That's probably anywhere from here to there. Okay, we'll just call that up there. That's one of the general things. Okay. More comments.
Pentecost, right near the
Apostles. Okay. Pentecost is really close to that. Okay. All right. Okay. Anybody else? Dorp?
Earthquake.
Okay, earthquake. We'll put that up here, too. That's probably just some things that are precursors.
I believe that goes back over to the Denver, too.
Okay, there's a big earthquake, right? So, but you think that earthquakes.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Okay, so you're saying there's an earthquake here. All right, we'll just put that here. Toward the end? Okay. All right, we'll call that the big one. Big one. All right. Hey, anybody else?
This is one.
Okay, one more government. Where did that go? A little bit before this we did. Israel what?
Born in one day.
Born? Israel born in one day. Where would that be?
1948.
Oh, okay. All right. So we'll just, well, for some people, that's a big day in prophecy, 1948. It's a big time in prophecy. So even, you know, the denomination we belong to, Church of God Seventh Day, that's a big deal, 1948. Starting to fade a little bit, but years ago, that was a big... Big, you know, they thought the end times were near because that happened. So, okay, anybody else? Yes. All right.
Four horsemen.
Four horsemen. Okay, where would you put that?
Pretty much between. Oh, good question.
Yeah.
Well, it follows the time, I guess, from ascension to return of Christ, in a sense.
Okay.
But intensifies more.
Okay. So you're talking more in that, like the tribulation, like within that? Okay. All right. We'll just include that in with that, the four horsemen, if you want to put it there. All right. Eric? Rick?
White throne judgment.
Okay.
Before the New Jerusalem.
Okay.
What's up here? White throne judgment.
All right. Any others? Dr. Johnson?
Lake of Fire.
Okay, the Lake of Fire, where's that?
Oh, right before New Jersey.
Is that Philadelphia?
Exit 1 of Jersey Turnpike.
Exit 1 of Jersey Turnpike, okay. Go ahead, Sue. The two witnesses, okay, where would you put them?
Right around the
time of the tribulation. Right, obviously, they're raised up right before Christ comes. So we'll put the two witnesses in there too. We have four horsemen and two witnesses. Yes. Famine and pestilence, anywhere in particular? Or
now.
Just as now. We've got that even now. There's famine. But it's going to be, it seems like there's an intense time during the tribulation. But yeah, that's part of the question. Okay, let me get somebody, Mike.
Armageddon.
Armageddon. Okay, where would you put Armageddon?
On the other side of the return.
Okay.
The
right here?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
I think I spelled that right. How much?
You can't read it anymore.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's see if I get somebody. Okay, go ahead. Bob, look at Bob.
The binding of Satan and the loosing of Satan at the end of the millennium. I guess the beginning of the millennium.
Okay.
So the millennium, I guess you can put that on the top of that little red
thing. All right, so we'll call the millennium starts where?
At the return of Christ.
At the return of Christ? Or at Armageddon?
When do you start the 1,000 years? I never really thought that specifically. I always thought it was starting with the return of Christ.
Okay. Well, I'm not. Okay, we'll just put that up here, okay? All right. And then you're saying Satan is loosed, and that's where?
That's at the end of the 1,000 years. The end of the 1,000 years.
That's past the end yet.
But he's bound at the return of Christ.
Okay. Is it before the white throne judgment? Is it in before that? When he's loosed?
Yeah.
Before. Okay. So here's.
I think so. Yeah, because people are going to be judged based on how they handle that, too. So it would be before that.
Right. So you want it before the earthquake or after?
Oh, I don't know that. You're going to have to choose that.
You were supposed to know. All right, we'll just, we'll arbitrarily put it here. Okay, that's the end of the reading. Well, we'll call it Satan loosed, okay? That's pretty good. All right.
With Satan, most you have God.
Okay, God is God?
That's what.
Okay, so is that, that's probably right after that, right? God and God. We're getting quite a few on there now. How about, let me just give you a few I have on here, maybe you can tell me where they go. How about the temple being destroyed? Maybe even broaden out and say the abomination that causes the desolation
in the middle of the tribulation.
Okay. You think the abomination is in the middle of the tribulation? Okay. Right. So it could be here.
Period of time.
What's that?
In that time period.
Okay, we'll just call the abomination. Alright. It'll be difficult depending on that, too. Or maybe a duel. Okay. Of course, the temple was destroyed back here. 70 AD, right?
Yeah, but
so that's
somewhat the third.
There seems to be quite a bit of prophecy about that. So. Mark, go ahead.
All of this option would be not around the time door, I said, of a great earthquake, unless it's even starting to come with the city out.
Okay, all right.
Great earthquake, the island must be right after I said, you know, split.
Mount of Olives.
Yes.
Alright. You know, most of them I have on here. Of course, we know the return of Christ, we have the resurrection, which is almost simultaneously. And we have, of course, Satan bound at the beginning of the millennium. So, but I think that was pretty much what I had on here. I was trying to just get the more general, but you can see already there's some differences of opinion on different things and how we view prophecy sometimes. And so it makes it interesting, makes for interesting studying. But and when you look at this, there's basically three approaches to prophecy at times, and there's probably more. I've read about more, but it seems like they're kind of mixed in some senses. But the three basic ones are known as a preterist approach, a historical approach, and a futuristic approach. This is primarily a historical approach. The church, since I've grown up, that's kind of the approach that the churches have had. A preterist approach, is anybody familiar with a preterist at all? Maybe Rick is, because he's studied some of these things. But the preterist approach says that most of prophecy has been fulfilled already. It's and by the way, this is interactive. If you've got questions or want to make comments, that's fine. But preterists say that most of prophecy is fulfilled, including Revelation. It's all fulfilled, I think, up to about chapter 20, they'll say. And that Jesus actually returned when the temple was destroyed in 70 AD. That was the abomination that caused desolation, was when they went in and destroyed the temple. So that's their idea, that when that happened, that there was a resurrection. It was a spiritual resurrection, obviously. And everybody's dwelling in heaven now. Of course, we would tend to reject that because we don't believe that we have life until Christ returns if we're in the grave. And then turn over to Revelation 1. You can see a verse that they would use. Revelation 1, just even at the beginning of the book. And you can see a lot of these throughout the New Testament, where it seems like the kingdom is imminent. You know, it's at hand. Revelation 1:1, it says, "The revelation of Jesus Christ, which God gave him to show his servants what must soon take place. He made it known by sending his angel to his servant John." So right there we see what must soon take place. You know, when we look at the book of Revelation, a lot of it's still in the future. But you know, John here is writing and saying, it's going to happen soon. And then if you get down to verse 3, it says, "Blessed is the one who reads the words of this prophecy, and blessed are those who hear it and take it to heart what is written in it, because the time is near." So, and you see that, you know, in 1 Thessalonians 4, where Paul's talking about the resurrection and the return of Christ, talks about the same thing. You know, that it seems like it's, to the New Testament writers, it was imminent. One of the biggest problems with that view is probably the fact that they almost, if you believe that Revelation is almost all fulfilled, then you almost have to believe that Revelation was written before 70 AD, which I don't think there's much of a chance that ever being the case. There's too much historical evidence that Revelation was probably written in the mid-90s. So there's some problems with that view. The futuristic approach says that everything from Revelation 4 to the end is all future. And it's all future to that 7-year period there, which we call the tribulation. And they believe that Matthew 24 and Daniel 7 are all future. And so there's no prophecy that's being fulfilled now, or has been since the time that Christ was on the earth. Revelation 2 and 3 are considered to be eras of the church, different eras of the church, which we've heard that before. I think a lot of us have understood that in the past, about them, those churches in Revelation 2 and 3 being different church eras. That would be the major problem with that, is to say that everything is future like that. It seems to me that some of those prophecies in Matthew 24 have definitely been fulfilled already. Seems like they relate to what talking about the temple in 70 AD. Well, the historical approach is the one which we've probably modeled here the best. Is probably the most common, has diversities within it that are, you know, which we'll cover a few of those today. But and really, I guess the historical approach is kind of a mix of a preterist view and a futuristic view, because we feel like some prophecies have been fulfilled, and some are definitely yet to come. So, and I think it's probably the one we're probably most comfortable with. And it's interesting when you look through these different approaches, especially when you get to this historical approach, it seems like the biggest differences are always on about the millennium. You know, where does that take place? When does it start? They use the words like, or where the return of Christ comes in too. Does Jesus return after the tribulation? Does he return before the tribulation? Does he return in the middle of the tribulation? Is the millennium now? Is the millennium something later? Is there a millennium? You know, there's all kinds of differences within this historical approach. And I'm going to pass out to you an article that was written some years ago, and I copied it and kept it. It was in the Bible Advocate, and it was written in, I think it was 1990 I saw on it. Yeah, December 1990, if somebody would just kind of
passing out for me. I appreciate it. Just passing that.
And you, I'm passing out because there's some little charts in there we can look at, but you can take the time to read the article later if you want. These talk about different views of the millennium, and which I would like to talk about a little bit today, especially as far as the return of Christ. And the first one that's on that sheet and one that we could talk about is called amillennialism or amillennialism. And anytime you see that little letter A in front of something, usually means that they say there's not a millennium. And in fact, they believe that, in a sense, they do believe in a millennium, but they believe that it's a celestial millennium. When you die, you go to heaven, and it's not a literal 1,000 years. It's just something you live in for eternity. And it's a, it's been spiritually present since the resurrection of Christ. And in some senses, you can see the preterist view in that because they believe that the kingdom started at the ascension of Christ and has continued ever since. And those prophecies maybe don't mean as much to them because the millennium is already here. And if you look on that sheet, on the diagram on the one there about the millennium, I think it's on page 5, it's at the top, you get an idea of what they believe. And I hope this is helpful. I mean, you've heard all this stuff before. I don't know. The gospel age started at the ascension of Christ. And they believe Satan was bound then. Satan has no more power over anyone. He was bound. He was defeated at the cross. And that was, he's no longer a factor. Of course, the first resurrection took place then. And of course, they think there is a time when Jesus is returning and some things will happen at the end as it shows there. And then, of course, there will be Armageddon and the second resurrection and the last judgment. So so that's amillennialism, and it's odd. And is anybody familiar with that at all? Or that was a kind of a common view many years ago. I think that was a pretty standard view for most churches up until maybe 17th century, I've read. So that was pretty much what churches believed. Of course, again, the biggest problem with that is that we would believe that we go to heaven when we die instead of waiting for the resurrection when Christ returns. Okay, anybody got any comments about amillennialism? A Mark?
What is it called in the Catholic Church
age,
they call that the church free law ruling. We call the darkness.
Yeah.
One other thing I'd like to see is stretching the temple on that chart. I think that's
a 70 AD. I put that on.
Oh, you put that
down. Yeah, I just put it at 70 AD. It's shorter than writing destruction of the temple. Okay.
Yeah,
you're right. And I think that's, I was looking at that because I think you're talking about, the Catholic Church was kind of thought the kingdom here on earth, where their church was. And I think it's kind of a mix between this amillennialism and the postmillennialism. That's a mouthful. But so I think that's, I think that's where that comes in. But yeah, it definitely is something that they believe. So.
I was going to add, basically, amillennialism is a Catholic position.
Yeah.
That came into the ascendancy after a couple of centuries had gone by. Sent around 313 when Constantine recognized Christianity, and the church began to say, well, persecuted, things look pretty good, we're going to rethink this 1,000-year idea.
Yeah.
And of course, Origen. School of thought where everything was spiritual and spiritualized things away.
Right. And that's one of the approaches to prophecy, too, is that everything is just spiritual, and, which I didn't put out here today, but it is. I don't know if many people believe that today, to be honest with you, but I don't know if there's many that believe that it's.
The Origen school pretty much fell into disrepute after 250.
Yeah. So. But, okay, anybody else? Gary?
As far as the order of the return of Christ and the setting of the bound and when the millennium starts, the holiday season that we're observing teaches us that being today the return of Christ, the second quarter that is taking the bound of the church by the day of atonement, and then the millennium starts teaching by the tabernacles and the last very day.
Yes. Good.
As far as is the millennium really a 1,000-year period? But the Bible in Revelation says it's 1,000 years. After the 1,000 years, which is a millennium, that's 1,000 years.
Right.
It's a literal 1,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
And years are an earthly thing. A year is an earthly unit of time. So it exists on the earth. So it is a literal 1,000-year period.
Yeah.
I'm
not saying
construe that as celestial. It's
perfect. Right. And that's, a classic historical approach is to say that there is, obviously Revelation has some, metaphors and allegory, but, we'll take a lot of it as literal, like you're saying about the 1,000 years. But like what Rick was saying years ago, they started spiritualizing everything. Every story in the Bible, every gospel, story that Jesus did was some allegory of some spiritual principle. It's really strange stuff if you read some of it sometimes. And I think a little bit of that has come down. Maybe we still read some of those stories and we hear interpretations of them. Like Mark was saying, the Catholic Church thought, and it kind of mixes in with the postmillennialism, which is that they believe that Christ will return at the end of the millennium instead of, and the millennium will come first. Catholic Church, went out, they started converting people by the sword, said, you either convert or die, and they started taking over the earth, and they thought, well, once the whole earth, that's the millennium, it's the golden age. And then the Reformed churches in the 1700s and 1800s, this was very popular as well, but the Protestant churches, this is the golden age of the church. The earth is getting better. It's going to be great. Pretty soon we're just going to have the Garden of Eden on earth again. And they take scriptures like in Matthew 18:18, where he says, talking to Peter, I'm going to build my church. He says, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. The gates of hell are not going to be able to prevent the church from growing. The church is going to be triumphant. So it would look good, we see how things progressed over the earth. The Catholic Church and the Dark Ages were ending, and it seemed like we hit the age of the mechanical age. I forget what it's called again, where we start having all the machinery and things like that. Things started getting nicer, and this is the great time. But then it got down. All of a sudden, you start having these huge wars in the 20th century. You have World War I, you have World War II, you have all these global conflicts, and that kind of idea just kind of dies when they see that kind of thing. And it doesn't seem like heaven's on earth. So, Mr. Parsons.
Well, not to try to stump you, Bruce.
Okay.
That's not my objective. We, our past leadership, our past church, has always said that the temple would be rebuilt and then destroyed prior to Christ's return. So this is one more thing that we have to look forward to in the days ahead. Now, are we going back now to 70 AD, or is there going to be another temple to be built? In other words, they can put up a temple today in a few days. Modern technology,
you
can build one in a few days. I'm just curious,
what's
your diagnosis there?
Well, that's probably a study in itself. But obviously the last temple that we know of was destroyed in 70 AD. But will there be another one built?
I don't know. Is God going to honor, you know, a temple that when he's not dealing with, you know, when he sees him dealing with people as Christians instead of by their nation? And there's those kind of aspects that come into it. I don't know. I'm not convinced.
Does it say that Christ would sit on David's throne? And it says, where is David's throne?
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
Two things. There's a society in Israel that already has the plans of the temple gone, and 90% of the material already in stock.
Okay.
To build the temple. And the other thing is that you spoke speaking about the Catholic Church. Well, in 2005, the Pope wrote a letter saying that we need to get back together with St. Stephen. And he even wrote a letter to the government in Brazil to stop having these soccer matches on the Sunday.
Okay.
In 2007, there was another letter written by the Cardinal one who is the secretary to the Pope. He said that we need to re-emphasize the fact re-emphasize the fact that we are to have a Sunday, mandatory Sunday worship law. And now, the latest thing that came out in July of 2007 is that the Cardinal of Berlin is going to sue the German government to make sure that they enforce the Sunday observance law.
Okay.
So we're getting closer to the tribulation than a lot of people.
Okay. And a lot of people have, well, the Seventh-day Adventists believe that the mark of the beast is a Sunday observance, forced Sunday observance. So, yes.
As far as a temple being rebuilt, whether that's the case or not, apparently, according to Daniel, there's going to be some kind of sacrificial system where you aren't going to have the abomination of desolation that's going to come about. So
okay.
There has to be something like that.
Okay.
If there's going to be an abomination that you have written down there where the
witnesses
are, there has to be some kind of sacrificial system in the temple.
Okay. Some have felt, you know, because it talks about that in Matthew 24 as well. And, you know, Jesus was asked several questions, and, you know, he said, this building's going to come down. And they said, when will that happen? And it seems like you almost have to take the time to separate where he's going from one thing to the next there. But some, like even one of the books I brought today, I don't know if any of you have seen this, Great Prophecies of the Bible by Ralph Woodrow, which is a pretty good read. He believes that abomination happened there. That's when the temple was destroyed. When that happened, when they came in there and knocked it down. So there's some debate about that, but I know what you're saying, and Daniel. Go ahead, Bob.
As far as the temple being rebuilt, I recently heard the head rabbi of Jerusalem over there was sharing a couple weeks ago that not only do they have the materials ready, they have all the implements already made for the temple. They have the red heifer ready. They have everything. They have all the Levites are prepared already. We've already graduated like 8 classes of Levites to serve in the temple. It's going to be done.
Mm-hmm. Imagine if they build that. That'll cause a riot already with the Muslims. I mean, that's especially if
the thing is not necessarily where the Gilman Rock is, like a lot of people think.
Right. Maybe across the hill.
Wrong line. A lot of other people surmised that Dr. Martin and that it was actually a space away from there where the temple actually goes to.
Right.
So I don't think they're really that common.
Yeah. Because it wouldn't take much to show that whole place into
a. Well, Antichrist has to come in, you know, and he's the one going to set himself up like God in the temple.
Right.
You know, so there has to be a temple of some kind.
Okay. Nice. Hey, anybody else? Yes, sir.
One little thing about
the
temple, you know, we are the temple of Christ. Right. We have the temple of God. So, right there, that puts a little question mark into the actual temple being built when we have the temple. And some of the believers will fall by the way.
Right.
So that the Antichrist will set up his temple in
Okay. Anybody else have any more comments about, we kind of got away from post-millennialism, but it's all right. You know, the biggest problem with that is that, again, that they're saying that the earth is going to get better. And of course, we know in 2 Timothy 3, it talks about in the last days, you know, yeah, it's just going to get worse. You know, when you read those things that happened there, that's not a better society. That's getting worse. So, okay. All right, well, of course, the last one is premillennialism. And, of course, there's all different kinds of ones there, you know. Does Jesus come back before the tribulation? Does he come back during the tribulation? Does he come back after the tribulation? I guess we could throw that into debate. Is the tribulation 7 years or is it 3.5 years? If you look at that chart there on page 6, that's historic premillennialism. And these are kind of just crude drawings, but you can see we fit, you know, a lot of the same stuff we said fits with this. You know, that there would be tribulation, although they put Armageddon before the return of Christ. Of course, then they have Satan bound and the resurrection and the millennium and then Satan released and the second resurrection and the white throne judgment at the last. So the only difference we would have here, I think, is having Armageddon maybe on this side. So, of course, Armageddon, we know, is found, what's that, Revelation 16, 19? I had it written down here, I think, somewhere. There's a break in the story, you said. 16:13. Yeah, I have 16:16 written down. Revelation 16:16, but I could be wrong. Is that Revelation 16:16? Okay. So in this case, it seems if Armageddon is, in verse 16 it says, then they gathered the kings together to the place that in Hebrew is called Armageddon.
That's just the gathering.
That's just the gathering. That's not the battle. Okay. And then where's the battle at?
It appears to be 19.
19, okay. 19:11, okay. Okay. So I guess there could be some debate, you know, if you think there's a gap. I mean, I guess that's what some folks are thinking. But it's before the return of Christ has been battled. Yes, Mark. You know, Mark's talking about, of course, William Miller, maybe most of you have probably heard of him, but it was in 1844, probably earlier in the 1840s, he started preaching that the return of Christ would be in 1843 first, and then he ended up in 1844, I think he said 3 days, and it didn't happen, but of course, the Adventists call that the great disappointment. I mean, they built their theology around that, but, the one thing you say about Miller, he focused people on the second coming of Christ. I don't think it was such a big, you know, people were looking at this earth to be getting better and better, you know, like the post-millennial people, and all of a sudden now you have somebody saying, no, Jesus is returning. And of course, a little later in the 1800s, we have what's called dispensationalism started, which really focused the return of Christ. And of course, they have the thing about the rapture, which Mark was talking about. Of course, we didn't put that in here. I don't know if anybody here.
Think the rapture started in 1835.
Yeah, but really got moving in the late 1800s and kind of took over really what we would call conservative Protestant churches, evangelical Christian churches, is this whole idea of a secret rapture. It's not, you know, we all believe we're going to be raptured, but it's a secret rapture that Jesus is going to come back and take people away before the tribulation, and then people that are left, of course, we've seen the movies, you know, the, what's that movie, it was out, Left Behind series or whatever, and so it's interesting to watch. But go ahead, Mark. Yeah. Well, when you start combining what, you know, we hear today is the health and wealth gospel, that, you know, you should be healthy and wealthy if you're following God. You combine that with that this rapture is coming, and before any trouble happens, you're going to be taken away. And you start putting Christians in this time period when they start to have to go through some trying times, you know, their faith is going to crumble. I mean, it's only obvious it's going to happen. So. Yes.
It really doesn't matter in what step you come in. What really matters is whether we as individuals have individual relationship with Jesus Christ and following His commandments.
Yes.
Not somebody else's.
Right.
But that is prophetic. It's true. That was in the past. That's true. But the reality is the relationship that each of us as individuals have with Jesus Christ. That is what's going to determine whether we make it to the, when Christ comes back, and we make it to the New Jerusalem.
Right. And if you look at, I believe, most of the prophecies about the second coming, and the one that talks about Christ returning, it almost, the emphasis is always on, I hope that's not mine. The emphasis is always on being ready. You know, we might not have all the details exactly right. You know, we may be surprised it's one or two of them. I don't think so. But, you know, but honestly, you know, we don't know. And you know, we study it to be prepared. But that is the idea: be prepared for Christ returning. And you know, that's how we're going to be in the kingdom if we're. We have that relationship with Him. That's obviously true. So. Okay, anybody else? I don't know what time it's getting to be here, but it's probably time to... What time is it? I have to look at myself. What's that? Okay, it's probably time to stop. That, so. Unless anybody else has any other comments. Okay, Dora?
Yeah, we have him here, Dora.
It's Satan being.
We're just saying Satan's being loose here at the end. Maybe you can't read it. But, you know, obviously, you know, that's when the kingdom begins. You know, there's, some would say, a mixed kingdom, probably between human and spirit beings. And then, of course, eventually it'll be all spirit beings when we get to the New Jersey. So.
Hubert? I know. I invited you to move up, didn't I? Did I not? So you can't blame me. So. Go ahead, Mark.
There's another intriguing thing near the end there. When will the deception be lifted from Jewish eye?
Well, you know you're going to have 144,000 right there is going to be converted. And it says also an innumerable multitude. So we're not sure.
That's it. It could be before Christ actually returns.
Some people say it's in this time period here.
Yeah, Revelation 11.
And some say it's God is here. You know, within Romans 9 or 10, somewhere around that area, it talks about all Israel will be saved. So
eventually.
That would be during the 1,000 years.
Yeah.
For sure.
Right.
Is there going to be a great awakening among Jewish people towards the end? Is that what you're asking or saying? Or is it, you know,
yeah, absolutely.
There's some people that really believe that. So.
That's something I think is a possibility.
Okay. Anybody else? Now we've thoroughly confused everybody. Hopefully not. Good, Bob.
You know, when is Christ going to return?
Is he? Did you hear me?
Brother sent it back. Be prepared. You know what to
yeah.
worry about.
I wish I knew. No. You know, that would be a horrible thing if he told us the date. You know what we would do? We'd wait to the last minute to get ready. And that's what would happen. That's exactly what would happen. So,
human beings.
That's exactly right. So. You know, for us, I guess, in a sense, Bob, it's when we take our last breath, which we don't know if it'll be in our lifetime or not, but that's when he returns, basically, isn't it? So, when we stop breathing, yes.
A lot of people keep telling me that they're fragile, and they're not going
to Well, yeah. Yeah. This is not a political forum. Yeah. So, yeah. So. Well, yeah, we better not go there. I'm a very cynical person when it comes to politics. I get myself in trouble. And so, okay, Sue, I saw your hand.
I just wanted to say that the Bible tells us to watch. And as long as I've been in the church, I think that's my one. You have one expert who says this, or another expert says that.
Yeah.
And, you know, over the course of time, a lot of those things have failed. And, you know, we know the Bible says all those things, and we know they're all going to happen. How they're going to happen, you know, I don't think, I mean, I've already seen it proven to myself that things that we thought we knew how they were going to happen did not happen.
Right,
that way.
Exactly.
So I think that's why it's important to watch and see how God brings all these things to pass and how they happen, because I don't think we can predict all those things.
Right. I think that's the key, is to study them, to know them, and maybe be able to recognize them when they happen, but, you know, to sit down and try to make predictions is probably, like you said, going to cost us. Go ahead, yes.
Sometimes I think that we all have to learn how to get along with them. Instead of splitting up and dividing, maybe we can start uniting and then maybe get them back.
Yeah. Could be. I don't know.
I don't think that's going to happen. In fact, if you look up the word remnant, you need to study the remnant.
You know, just a story about predicting the end, but you know, we're part of the Church of God Seventh Day, but it was basically founded by a guy named Gilbert Cranmer back in the 1860s, but he was part of the William Miller movement in 1844, and he had I think it was on October 22nd, 1844. He was going out the door, and his wife just said, "You'll be back." And while he was going out the door, and he said, "No," he said, "I'm leaving today. You know, this is it." And so he went out to some hillside, I guess, where they were meeting to get ready for the coming of Christ. And it didn't happen. He came back home that night, and I guess she just kind of, you know, really gave it to him. But so, you're still here. So, so anyway. But it can need to be careful about that. A lot of people get egg on their face when they start predicting dates, and you know, that's troublesome. So. Okay, anybody else? And again, you know, this book here, if you want to, it's a pretty good book on prophecy, Great Prophecies of the Bible by Ralph Woodrow, and I have this other one, The Blessed Hope, which is by George Ladd. It's probably written 50 years ago, but it's still pretty good. It's kind of written against the idea of the rapture, but he gives a good case for the historical approach. So, okay. Well, thank you.